Welcome to the Football Project. My name is Lucas Abreu. I'm joined with Vivek Badenwal. Is it joined with or joined by, Vivek?
You know, whatever you're feeling in a given moment. I think what I'm more impressed by is you got the name of the podcast correct. Well done.
Yeah, it took me a beat, but I had to. I gathered myself, centered myself, and now I'm here. I'm ready. I'm focused to do this. Today, we are talking about coaches and what a coaching staff looks like. We will be focusing mostly at the NFL level, only because the college coaching also kind of involves recruiting, so we won't be touching on that as much today. But Vivek, yeah, you've been a coach, So I'm going to defer to you because I feel like having been one of these, you know far more than I.
And I might share some experiences, but I'm actually really curious to hear your thoughts. I feel like coaching is one of those things that most people watching from home, like, I think this is one of the things that people are like, oh, I could do that, or I could have made that call better. And I'd be really curious to hear some of your thoughts along the way. So I guess with that, what are your thoughts on what makes a good football coach?
I feel like a good football coach is someone who communicates clearly and gets everyone on the same page for a single goal. Scheme is important.
Yeah.
Training is important, obviously. You want to be able to game plan throughout the week for whatever it is that, for whichever opponent it is you're playing. But I think that if you can be a coach who your players will put their bodies on the line for, play in, play out, I feel like that is someone who, that's what makes a good coach. Not like the brains as much as it does, yeah, am I willing to die for this person on the field?
Oh gosh, that's maybe, I don't know. That's a high bar. I'm like, yeah.
And obviously like the intelligence matters too. Like someone who can scheme up a good game plan, but I think that the personality matters maybe a little bit more.
I think what you're saying, like there's something you're getting at where it's like, oh, do I respect this person? Is this person someone that I could follow? Do I trust that this person has the team's best interests in mind? Do I trust that person is going to help me be the best version of myself for whatever personal or team goals there are? Like, I think you hit on a number of things that I think are really important when it comes to coaching. Who are some of your favorite coaches to, like, when you think about like NFL coaches, who are some of the coaches that you're like, you know, I may not be able to tell you exactly what they do, but they're doing something right.
Yeah. Honestly, I hate that he's on the Steelers, but Mike Tomlin, the fact that he's not gone below 500, like he's obviously doing something right, throwing Kenny Pickett out there and just like, and Mason Rudolph and just finding a way. Another person that comes to mind is Mike McDaniel in Miami. Just a dude who you'd expect to be playing Madden. And he's just an NFL head coach. And obviously he's brilliant at that. But I think that there's something about his personality that just works. I think players gravitate toward that and respect that. And again, like when you are able to shape an entire game plan around Tua to make a player succeed, like players want to feel cared for. And I feel like that's a way to care for them by doing what you can to make them look good.
You know, it's funny to hear you mention those two people in particular, because I agree with, like, I have a lot of respect for those two individuals as coaches, but I know enough Steelers fans and I know enough Dolphins fans that are really frustrated with their head coaches. Like, I think a number of Dolphins fans that I've talked to are like, yeah, Mike McDaniels is great, but we can't win any big game. Like, we win any game that the other team is over 500. Or like, Mike Tomlin is great, but we're just going to be in like
a limbo for,
we're going to be mid for like, we're in like mid purgatory. We're never going to be like more than 10 wins and we're never going to be less than six wins. Like, we're just going to be stuck in the middle. So I think what you're painting a picture of is like just how fickle fans can be sometimes from the outside looking in, not as a fan of those teams. You're like, wow, those two guys, they're doing a lot of really cool stuff. And I can see why they're good coaches. And even their players seem to really respect them and think highly of them. But as fans, it can be tough to appreciate what you have until it's gone.
So coaches, though, outside of just motivating players, right? Like, what do they have to do week in, week out?
So I thought it could maybe be helpful to break it down into different spheres of coaching. There's like different layers or levels of responsibility. And so I thought we could start with the highest level of responsibility being the head coach.
Okay. Yeah.
And kind of working our way from there down to like coordinators and then position coaches and then coaching assistants who are on the staff. Tricky thing about this, we're going to speak really broadly on these things because it depends how the head coach wants to do things. So some of the responsibilities are going to look very different for a head coach in one team versus how another head coach wants things done on another team. So starting with head coach, I think maybe a phrase or tagline that could be helpful to remember is just they're the CEO of the team. They are in charge of the culture of the team. They're in charge of how they want the team to be run. They're kind of the face of the franchise.
Yeah.
For some coaches, that means they don't actually do any of the play calls during the game. They're more just like overseeing like clock management and making sure all the pieces are running smoothly and fitting together. For other coaches, it's like, that means they're heavily involved. They might be the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator also, or the play caller also, but there's some level of responsibility that each head coach has that transcends the entire team, and they're overseeing the whole team.
That makes sense. Who do you feel like right now is someone who, whether they've been a coach for one or two seasons or 20 seasons, who kind of embodies maybe not the perfect head coach, but a lot of the characteristics of an ideal head coach?
Yeah, I'll throw out two, and I think they kind of encapsulate the spectrum that I was kind of just describing there. I will say there's no perfect head coach. If I had to be completely honest, I'd say great players make great coaches, especially at the NFL level. If you don't have a great, you know, you might be able to win a few games here or there with talent that doesn't match the other team you're playing. But honestly, if you have transcendent talent, that typically ends up making coaches look really good. But all that to say, I think there are some pretty elite coaches on one end of the spectrum. Andy Reid for the Kansas City Chiefs, he calls the offensive plays and he has a reputation for being a really creative play caller and play designer. And one thing that may not get highlighted about him enough is he's really humble as a coach. So a story that captures that is before a game, a janitor came up to him and was like, "Hey coach, I got a play that I think is really good." And Andy Reid like looked at him and was like, "All right, show it to me." And the janitor was kind of caught off guard. Like, what? Like, I didn't expect you to do that, but okay. And he showed Andy Reid the play and Andy was like, "That's a pretty good play." It was like a few weeks later, the janitor was at home watching the game with his wife and he saw the Chiefs run the play that he called and it worked for like a first down or something. And he was like so geeked. He like was like telling his wife, like, "That's my play. That's my play."
Amazing.
Yeah. And so all that to say, I think some of the best coaches are coaches that aren't just like, "I have all the answers. I know how everything's done," but they include multiple voices into the conversation. It may not be a regular habit of Andy Reid to get input from the janitor for his play calls. But I think it speaks to how he has a humility and is able to like recognize, hey, a good play call is a good play call wherever it comes from.
That makes sense. I feel like humility was a word that came to mind because humility is someone who like puts the best idea forward and not just their idea forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then who's the second coach?
The other one I was going to say on the other end of the spectrum of like play calling would be John Harbaugh for the Baltimore Ravens. And you could have also said Mike Tomlin for this too. I think both of them are like, it's very rare for an NFL coach to be on staff for longer than a decade with the same team. And I think John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin are the only two coaches that have been in the NFL with the same team as head coach for longer than a decade. And neither of them call plays for the offense or call plays for the defense. They have like expertise in different ways, but both of them do a great job of managing relationships with players and with other coaches. They do a great job of bringing in coaches who have a reputation as play callers and working with players. And there's a culture that they've instilled that when you think of the Baltimore Ravens or when you think of the Pittsburgh Steelers, there's a toughness, there's a grit, there's a hard work, all these sorts of things that like they've brought to that team and kind of embodies them regardless of who's playing. And something interesting about John Harbaugh too is if you look at their offense over the past decade, he's been very willing to completely change what their offense is about in order to try and be like, what's going to best suit our players and what's going to win games. So a decade ago, they had Joe Flacco and they were like airing it out a ton during a game. And then over time, once Lamar Jackson took over, they shifted to like very much a running team. Yeah. They were doing all sorts of like option sorts of plays that like highlighted Lamar's athletic ability. And now they're switching more to like a passing attack again, that's like more downfield and highlighting Lamar's like passing ability too. And so like, it's so important for a head coach to be able to be like, okay, I'm not trying to just like put forth my system that I'm most comfortable with. I'm trying to put my players in the best position to make plays.
Yeah.
And it might be through a system or structure that I'm not most comfortable with, but I'm going to find people who are comfortable with that and are experts in that and bring them in to coach our players.
One thing you touched on with the culture, I feel like is, you know, and obviously this person would have also fit the bill, but it is Bill Belichick. And I feel like having the culture of like the Patriot way, I just find that really interesting that like, coaches who are able to stay with one team for a long period of time, like you are given the ability to create a culture. Cause I think part of the issue now is that coaches are given like 2 or 3 years, or maybe they get a rookie quarterback and like that's when their clock starts, right? Like D'Amico Ryans with CJ Stroud. If CJ doesn't work out in those first 4 years, D'Amico is probably out.
Yeah.
To have that sustained culture is really important.
You bring up a great point, because take Bill Belichick, for example. People saw him as kind of a flame out after his first tenure as a head coach.
Yeah.
He was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. They were just okay. The Browns moved. He got fired. And then he was kind of like seen as like mediocre in his first early years after that too. It wasn't until Tom Brady got there and the two of them formed this like amazing combination that he started to be seen as like this really respected coach. I think a lot of head coaches who've been fired over the years would be like, man, if I just had another year, or if I just had a couple more years, I think we could have really done some good things.
And so after coaches, we have offensive and defensive coordinators. Is there also a special teams coordinator, or does that
fall? There is. Yeah, there's there's an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, and a special teams coordinator. And for offensive and defensive coordinators, there's varying degrees to which they're involved. For some coordinators, they're kind of seen like the head coach of the defense or the head coach of the offense. So in a situation like in Baltimore with John Harbaugh, like he gives a lot of autonomy to his defensive coordinator and his offensive coordinator, and they call the shots. In other situations, like in Kansas City with Andy Reid, that's been some of the, maybe the trickiness for some of the people who've been offensive coordinators there. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm the offensive coordinator, but Andy's really calling the plays here and Andy's really kind of running the show. And it can make it kind of difficult for them to be able to find an opportunity to get that head coaching job or a step up in pay or title because they haven't had that opportunity. But some of the biggest things for a coordinator is they got to have a great handle on the entire picture of how all the position groups fit together. They have to know not only the strengths of their team really well, but on a given week, whoever the opponent is, they have to know the opponent as well as they know themselves. And what I mean by that, they have to know the opponent's tendencies. They have to know the opponent's personnel. They have to know in what situations to be alert for certain plays or certain trick plays. It's almost like if you're a coordinator, you're cramming for the biggest test of your life at the end of every week going into a game. And so you have to have an awareness of not only what is this other team trying to accomplish, but what are your strengths and how can you impose what you're trying to do on the other team? And there's a lot of factors that go into that, but that's just broadly speaking.
That makes sense. Yeah, I feel like whenever we have a defensive-minded head coach, kind of like Bill Belichick that we mentioned earlier, I feel like there's always different offensive coordinators that he's worked with. Like Bill O'Brien comes to mind, someone who he will bring in and then just kind of trust with the offense to work. And again, he had Tom Brady, so that helped too. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting to see that, like, depending on who the head coach is, the coordinator is the head coach of that specific unit.
Yeah. And it trickles down too to like the position coaches then. Say, for instance, your head coach is a great offensive mind and your offensive coordinator is calling the plays and is a great offensive mind. If you're a quarterback's coach on that staff, your voice in the quarterback room or in the offensive meeting rooms probably looks very different than if your head coach is more defensive minded and the coordinator is maybe calling the plays, but has maybe more of an expertise with like offensive line play. And then you're the quarterback's coach and you're seen as like kind of the expert as like how to prepare the quarterback for game days. You're kind of hopefully getting a picture of like, what are the strengths of the head coach? What are the strengths of the coordinator? And then what are the strengths of like the position coaches to fill out a well-rounded staff? And then even for coordinators too, I think something for them to be mindful of is the skill level of the players that they're coaching. So say for instance, you're a relatively young coordinator or a relatively young quarterback's coach, and you're coaching, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers. There's probably not a lot of new stuff you can tell Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is like 39 years old or something like that, like MVP quarterback. There's probably not a lot that you're adding to the table there that like Aaron's like, oh, I haven't thought about that, or oh, I didn't know that. A lot of what you're doing is you're trying to help Aaron feel comfortable. You're trying to get a feel for like what Aaron likes and doesn't like and make sure that that communication is happening between the coordinator and him. And you're really trying to prepare the backups, because if something happens to Aaron Rodgers, he's got to go in and he's got to have a command of the offense. Ultimately, at the end of the day, players just want a coordinator who is going to prepare them for game day and who's going to help them be the best version of themselves. I think it can be tricky as a coordinator because you're trying to do what's best for the team. You're trying to like develop a game plan that's ultimately going to lead to a win, but you're also trying to navigate egos and personal goals of players that I think every player wants to win, but they're also trying to get their next contract and they're trying to like put up good stats. And the only way you're going to put up good stats is if you get the ball.
Yeah.
There's some tricky elements for coordinators where it's like, all right, sometimes the best way to win is get the ball to your best playmakers. Other times the defense might be taking away your best player, or the offense might be staying away from your best player. And so now you've got to try and find a way to adapt for the team, but then also to help keep players engaged in the game.
Who's an example of a coordinator that stands out to you as an elite example of that?
They have an award for this that they share at the end of the football season. So Jim Schwartz won the Coordinator of the Year award. He's the defensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns, former head coach and has future head coaching aspirations. But he did a phenomenal job taking a defense that was pretty good, but playing to the strengths of the players on his team, putting them in positions to make plays. And I think one of the things that his players often said about him this past year was he simplified the game in such a way that they didn't have to think as much on the field and they could just play fast. And I think that's a great compliment to give a coordinator. You can draft up the most exotic, impressive plays, but if your players aren't able to execute it cleanly,
yeah,
if they're having to get bogged down in the details and think too much so they can't use their gifts and their skills, it's actually not that impressive. It's actually not that helpful. And so one thing that made Jim Schwartz such a good coordinator this past year was he simplified the defense in a way that they could play to their strengths. Another thing that he did is he held the players to a high standard, like held them accountable for like when they made mistakes and stuff, but he allowed them to be themselves also. He encouraged his players to, hey, when you make a big play, get excited, celebrate with your teammates, have fun. And I think some coaches kind of get upset if their players look like they're having too much fun, for lack of a better way to say it. Yeah. Jim Schwartz is like the opposite. The players were actually saying like, yeah, if we made a big play and we didn't celebrate it on film the next day, we got a minus on our player grade because we didn't play with that sort of energy or that sort of swagger.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I feel like we need more of that because again, like, man, if it isn't fun, then like, what are you doing?
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So on the topic of the coordinators, we had someone reach out and ask via email, which is thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com, if you have any other questions. But what makes a good coordinator ready to be a head coach? Because sometimes I feel like coordinators are just better off as coordinators and they don't have it in them to be a head coach. And sometimes coaches are better at being head coaches than coordinators. But what do you look for in an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator to take that next step as head coach?
Yeah, I think you named something pretty important there, which is like, I think some of the best coordinators would maybe be best suited to stay as coordinators rather than going to head coach. And the reason for that is there's just so many other responsibilities that come with being a head coach. Like the places that I've been at a college level, I was surprised how many other roles and responsibilities and like public events and engagement that a head coach had that just took away from their ability to be part of the game planning and be part of the X's and O's of it. It's just a lot of extra stuff that a head coach has to do. And so some traits or skills that you're going to need as a head coach is to be able to wear a lot of different hats, being able to say the right thing in front of media, not necessarily the thing that's on your mind, not necessarily the thing that's even quote unquote true, but the thing that's the proper response. You're kind of a politician in a lot of ways as a head coach, as the face of the franchise. And then on top of that, being able to put your ego aside and be able to just put the best people in the best positions. So maybe it's best for you, like say you're a coordinator and you got the head coaching job because you are a great coordinator. Maybe the best thing for the team is for you to keep calling plays. But if it's becoming too much to call plays and do all of the other responsibilities that you have as head coach, maybe it's best to bring in someone else to be the coordinator. And that can be hard to do. And the other thing you have to do is you just have to treat players with respect and dignity. And that sounds maybe common, but that hasn't always been the case. Whereas now it's like players are very quick to be like, if this guy doesn't respect me, I'm not going to respect them. If this guy doesn't treat me like an adult, I'm not going to treat them like an adult. Whereas maybe in previous eras of football, you kind of saw like the head coach is like the dictator and they could pretty much do anything. Those times I think are long gone. And then on top of that, you have to be authentic. Like I think players can tell when you're being fake. Mm. So if you're not a big rah-rah hype energy guy and you're faking that, players can tell. Players just have a radar for fakeness. And having a coach who's able to like be true to himself and be true to the players and true to the game, I think just goes a long way.
That makes sense. And so under the coordinators, we have position coaches. How many position coaches are there typically offensively and defensively?
Yeah, it typically depends on like what the coordinator wants or needs. So on offense, you'll have quarterbacks coach, running backs coach, offensive line coach, receivers coach, tight end coach. And so that's like five on offense. And then defense, you'll have things maybe parsed out a little bit more. So you might have like a D-line coach. You'll have like a linebackers coach. And sometimes that's like outside linebackers or rush coaches. You'll have sometimes just a defensive backs coach. Sometimes you'll have a cornerbacks coach and a safeties coach. So it can vary a little bit more.
And so position coaches, understandably and obviously so, focus on specific positions. They work with them for drills, I assume, like whether it's pass rushing drills or footwork drills, whatever it is. What else outside of specifically training their units do they kind of have to focus on throughout the week?
Yeah. So maybe like going back to like the specific units, I think a helpful framework of thinking about what they're helping their position players learn, it's four things: stance, alignment, technique, and assignment. So they are drilling pre-snap stance, pre-snap alignment, technique during the play, and then like from the play, like whatever the play call is, what their assignment is and completing their assignment. There's a lot of things that they think through, but you can probably put anything into one of those four categories: stance, alignment, technique, and assignment. You know, when we were watching film, like self-scouting after a game or practice film, we'd have these like grading charts and it would be the player's name on the left and then stance, alignment, technique, and assignment on the top. It'll kind of create like an axis. So like the x-axis was stance, alignment, technique, assignment, and then the y-axis was the player's name. And each play you go through on the film and you leave comments on their stance, their alignment, their technique, and their assignment. And hopefully that gives some sort of appreciation for like, that's the level of detail that position coaches and coordinators and even head coaches to some extent are going into every single day. They're analyzing every player on every play. And so that takes a long time to do that and to do that well and to communicate it in a way for players to capture clearly, not just off of film, but real time, like on game day or during practice.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that they do. Other things, they run position meetings based on how the coordinator wants them to run their position meetings. That's where they watch film together, talk through game plans together and scouting reports together. They have to have an understanding of how their position fits into the greater picture of what the defense or the offense is trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And they're part of crafting the game plan for game day. So the offensive position coaches are with the offensive coordinator crafting a game plan. They're watching film together. They're thinking through different things. What plays could work? What concepts could work? What mismatches could they find with their players against the opposing players coming up? Yeah, so those are some of the big things that they do. Occasionally, you'll see a position coach that has like a unique title as like quote unquote run game coordinator or quote unquote pass game coordinator. And that might mean that they literally think through that aspect for the upcoming week. So say, for instance, you're the pass game coordinator on offense or defense. So then you're going through all the throwing specific down and distances or game situations that are going to be pass heavy, and you're trying to think through those concepts, those plays, those personnel groupings. It's almost kind of like a mini coordinator of sorts. You're just thinking about one phase of the offense or one phase of the defense. But another reason someone might have that title is essentially to just keep that person on staff, give them a higher pay, give them something that's like a resume builder for them to later become a coordinator. Sometimes a position coach might get offered a job elsewhere, and the best way to keep them is to give them higher pay and give them something that's going to build their resume. So their move to another team isn't a linear move, but their next move might be to an actual coordinator position. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah. So who kind of stands out to you as an example of that at an elite level?
You know, there's a lot of really great position coaches out there, so it's hard to just pick one. But one that I feel a little bit more familiar with is Bill Callahan. He's been a head coach before. He's very long tenured as a coach in the NFL, and he's an offensive line coach, very well respected. When it comes to offensive line play, most people consider him to be the expert, not just as, oh, he's learned a lot over the years, but he's also very creative and can fit offensive line play into several different offensive philosophies and schemes, to where he's very versatile in the way that he can coach his players up to play offensive line in any scheme. We'll get into like that sort of stuff in another episode, but whether it's zone blocking or gap blocking or those sorts of things, he's very familiar with all of it and does a great job.
What about assistants? Because again, as you mentioned, like the intensity in which these position coaches look at details with stance, alignment, technique, assignment, those are things that the head coach would not physically have enough time to do with every player
right.
on the team.
Right.
So even those position coaches need assistants. What does that look like for the assistants?
Yeah. So I think what you're getting at is like, there's so much film to watch and so much film to break down that if position coaches and coordinators were doing that, they would have no time to really do anything else. And so there's a bevy of coaching assistants, is just a broad umbrella term that you can use for it, to fill that gap. And there's a spectrum of the kind of coaching assistant. There's one kind of coaching assistant that they just sit down on a computer and they grind and they break down film and they translate every play into the language of the offense or the defense to be able to be like, hey, this is what this play is called in our offense, or this is what route concept they ran or what run play they ran. And then there's another kind of coaching assistant. It's like, maybe they were a head coach somewhere else, or maybe they were a coordinator somewhere else. And now they're just coming to either volunteer their time or get a small paycheck to just share their thoughts and help out at practice. Like an example of that is, you know, we had Doug Plank on the podcast with us, and him and I were both coaching assistants. So I was someone who was grinding film and breaking plays down and translating it into the offense or the defense. And Doug wasn't doing that sort of stuff. What Doug was doing was he was sitting with players and watching film and out at practice and just being another set of eyes. So there's like a spectrum of what kind of coaching assistants there are. So like, for example, like in the NFL, Mike Vrabel is a former head coach, and he just got fired last year from a head coaching job. And now he's just a coaching assistant on an NFL team. And he's probably going to become a head coach again. But this is like kind of a nice in between for him to be like, you know what, I'm going to take a break from being the head coach, just be around ball, learn from other folks, offer my insights if I can, and be part of a team that way. So there's all sorts of coaching assistants out there. Some of the most famous coaches in the NFL right now start out as coaching assistants, like folks who are doing kind of grunt work stuff, like putting playbooks together and scouting reports together and practice plans together. And the kind of stuff that they're doing is the kind of stuff where it's like, you could maybe spend hours of work on for like a few seconds of payoff. For instance, you might be asked by the coordinator to be like, hey, I want to know every third down play this team runs in the red zone out of this formation. And so you're going through film, labeling every play that their offense ran on third down in the red zone and what formation they're in. And then you're like putting those filters on and then printing out a report that you then get to your coordinator, and your coordinator looks at it for maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds. And they're like, huh, that's interesting. And they just want to like confirm like their thought. Like they've watched so much film that they're like, hey, my guess is out of this formation in the red zone, they love this play. And then they just want to see the data that backs it up. And so you did hours of work to find the data, and they just like look at it and they're like, yep, that confirms what I thought. Okay, cool. And then that's it. Like, wow. So it's a thankless job. It's one that like you end up needing to spend a lot of hours doing, but it helps you get a great understanding of the game because you're just watching so many plays and so much film and how to translate things into like the language that your offense or your defense speaks. And then you're also doing like literally anything else that's needed. So typically this is the case for like younger, inexperienced coaches or like interns. So like I worked as like an intern at Ohio State. And when I was there, each intern had like a day of the week where they would get lunch for like the entire staff. I forget what day of the week it was. Let's call it Tuesday. That was like Subway day. And this was like, you know, before apps where it's like you could just like order it online and stuff like that. So I'd show up with like 20 different orders from Subway. And it's surprising. I still remember some of the coaches and the specifics of their Subway order. And people are sometimes like, oh man, that must have sucked to be the Subway guy. But I was like, well, it wasn't that bad. Like a coach gave you a credit card and you got to pay. You had your lunch covered. And then I had Subway card to get Subway points. So it's like literally every week I got like,
amazing.
I don't know, hundreds of Subway points, thousands of points for to have like multiple free subs for like the week. So it wasn't too bad.
Amazing.
But that's that kind of stuff that you're doing as a coaching assistant that can transcend, I should say, the football part of it.
So one last thing before you wrap up here, I was just curious, sometimes when you're watching from home, you see coaches on the sideline, you see coaches and their reactions to a play or a touchdown up in the coach's box. What's the difference? Because I assume it's not just a seniority thing, right? Like there must be a purpose behind it. I'm just curious, like what's the difference between a coach on the sideline and a coach up in the coach's box?
Yeah, the head coach is always on the sideline, but for coordinators, it's really preference. Like some coordinators, they want to be up in the coach's box so they can see the whole field, so they can be on the headset and communicate down to the sideline what they see. For other coordinators, they want to be on the sideline and they're able to like see things decently, but they want to be able to have that like feel for the game, being on the sideline, being around the players, talking to the players. It's totally a preference thing from their standpoint. The position coaches then that fill in, they typically are assigned where to be. Some are up in the box and some are down on the field. If you're down on the field, you're typically relaying information from folks. So for instance, say you're the defensive backs coach and you're on the sideline, you're only able to see one or two defensive backs that are closest to you, right? Like you can't really see what's happening on the other side of the field. So you're relying on the eyes in the box to be able to relay that. But you're the eyes and the mouthpiece on the ground, connecting with players, trying to keep morale up if things aren't going well, and trying to like relay communication in a way that's like clear and helpful. If you're up in the box, there tend to be a lot of different responsibilities. Some folks, they're just dialed in, trying to predict what the offense or defense is going to line up in or is lined up in play-wise. Other times, you're charting plays. So it's like you're charting what they actually did. So if it was a pass play, you're maybe charting what the routes were. So then you can relay that down to the sideline. If it's a run play, you're charting what that was. If it's you're watching the defense, you're charting what coverage they ended up playing, or if they brought pressure, if they brought a blitz. You have a better vantage point to be able to see that stuff. So you have to draw that up or write that up pretty quickly to then be able to communicate it down to the sideline or down to the coordinator.
Amazing. Yeah, well, Vic, I appreciate you sharing all your insight. I was just curious, do you have any other last final thoughts before we sign off?
You know, one last thing is going back to this idea of like the relationship between a coach and a player. And I think something that we've seen the NFL do more of recently is prioritize the hiring of more Black coaches. And I think that's really important from the standpoint of most NFL players. Like most of the NFL is made up of Black athletes. And there's a unique way that Black coaches are able to relate with Black athletes, having gone through similar experiences maybe, and having gone through maybe even as a player themselves, to be able to connect with the athletes that they're coaching in a unique way that I think centers their experience as Black athletes. I think that's has become more and more important for teams and for players. And so it's been cool to see a coach like you mentioned, D'Amico Ryans for the Houston Texans, former player himself and one of the few Black head coaches in the NFL. I think there's something to be said about that, that more Black coaches are getting opportunities to coach as coordinators and a head coach. And just want to say, I think that's really important and I'm here for it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing that up because I feel like you said, there isn't enough representation, and not that any one person is a better or worse head coach because of the color of their skin. But I think that even like what I mentioned earlier in terms of being a coach that motivates their players, I think that when you can relate to someone at a personal level because of your shared experiences, especially in a predominantly Black sport, I think that it's important to have representation, not just for the sake of having representation, but allowing Black coaches and managers to have opportunities in the same way, because in the past they've just been excluded from that. And so, yeah. But yeah, so on that note, I appreciate you sharing that, Vic. And as a reminder, this is just somewhat of a brief overview talking about coaches and the coaching staff, what their roles and responsibilities are, so that next time you watch a football game, you kind of understand the amount of work that goes into a single play call even. And so if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us at thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com or connect with us down below in the episode description. And yeah, I think that's it, Vic. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Yeah. Thanks for co-hosting this together. You're the man. And I'm excited to talk to you later.
You're the man, man. Come on. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye. See ya. What's a specific order you remember from someone that was like, wow, I can't believe they did that, or you don't understand why?
No one had anything like that was like too crazy, but I do remember one coach, it was just so basic. He's like, I want the oven roasted chicken breast toasted Italian herb with cheese. It was like American cheese, lettuce, and Southwest sauce, extra Southwest sauce.
Amazing.
That can't be good for you to just be pounding that every Tuesday for 5 months out of the year, but that was his go-to.
That's amazing.
And a Diet Coke and a bag of plain Lay's.
Wow. I'll have to give that
It's not that great. I'll be honest with you. It's it's very basic.
Yeah.